Welcome to Inside the Game, episode 68. It's April 30th, 2013. I'm DJ Wheat, joined by EG Idra and EG in control. Now, I understand many of you asking, where is EG the Muslim? Well, the Muslim is grinding ladder games really, really hard to try to make it into the Shoutcraft North American competition. I know. Immediately you're saying he can't compete that, but the Muslim doesn't know that. And, you know, at this point, he's number one. He wants to just soar above the rest like an eagle. Let him grind his games.
Like a bald eagle.
Let him grind the games. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode. What's up, gentlemen? How have you? Jeff, you've been traveling.
Yeah.
Back home now.
Just got back 2 days ago from Sweden. Beautiful, amazing country that it is. And I'm not just saying that because you're supposed to talk nice about the places you go, but Sweden is actually amazing, and I had a great time.
That's phenomenal. I just want you to know that I hated you all weekend as I was watching. And
why?
The event looked amazing. The event looked fantastic. We're going to talk about DreamHack in just a second. But, Greg, how's it been? How you doing?
It's pretty good. I've finally gotten mostly moved in, so I've just been back to playing StarCraft and streaming a bunch. So I've
been watching your stream a little bit. I'm curious to ask a little bit about the Shoutcraft competition. And whether or not you think you're going to be able to grind into that. But we'll get to that in a second. Let's talk DreamHack, which is obviously the event that we come off of this past weekend. Jeff, you were there. I managed to catch a good amount of it as well. And, you know, I don't even know where to start. I think first and foremost, I would say I was really impressed with Naniwa and how he played and the games that he put forward. I was actually really surprised that we didn't see more Terran victories, but I think I want to talk about all those things in a little bit more.
I think competition-wise, it was pretty surprising. Polt getting eliminated the way he did, dropping to both Huck and Grubby is shocking. I don't know that Polt deserved quite the hype that he had going into it. Like, Team Liquid rated him number one on their power rankings going into it. Everyone was like, well, Polt's going to win this. Let's see who takes second type of thing. And Polt's really good, but I don't view Polt as a enter tournament shoe-in to win the thing kind of. I think the competition's too high for that, especially when Leenok's attending, and that sounds a little bit silly now that we've seen what Leenok did, but I'll tell you, going into the tournament, I felt pretty good about Leenok anyways. He's just, my only question was his ZVT just because of the way Innovation made him look at MLG. Innovation absolutely mopped the floor with him, but obviously Innovation does that with a lot of people, because I do view Innovation as probably top three Terrans on the planet. But Leenok did not disappoint. Amazing competition, and I gotta say, tip of the hat to the foreigners, because Naniwa did well. It was nice to see Huck taking games off of big-time players, including Koreans. Sase made a good run. You know, there's some good representation from the foreigners, I thought.
There's definitely good representation by the foreigners. I mean, as we're looking at the top, you're still looking at first through eighth with six of those spots occupied by Korean players. The Korean player Gumiho taking eighth spot or in the 5-8 range. And I don't know. Is it would you guys, were you guys surprised at all? It's sort of a lack of Terran play, like we saw. Zerg take it, Protoss, Zerg, and then Zerg, Terran. And that's just a crazy race distribution, I think, for top eight.
Well, Polt and who was the other one? It was Polt and
Gumiho.
4GG. Nah, 4GG.
Yeah, 4GG.
Both got cheesed out by Protosses, who I think most people would consider them favorites going into it. But, I mean, sometimes yes, you lose to that. And Gumiho is the other one who should have done well. He got top eight. I'm not sure who eliminated him. But, I mean, were there too many other good Terrans outside of that? I mean, there were the Eastern European Terrans, but they're not particularly above the rest of the Europeans either, and they're not supposed to be expected to beat, like, the Koreans. So if you consider the way Polt and 4GG went out and the rest of the Terran representation, I'm surprised Gumiho didn't do better just because he is so incredibly good, but he's never really been a big performer at foreign events. He's much more like a pro league kind of guy. So maybe it's just not his kind of tournament, and he still did get top eight. But he's the one who particularly surprises me. And, I mean, of course, everyone would expect Polk and Fortigi to do better, but they lost to things that are understandable to lose to.
I think even getting away from the Koreans, a couple of the interesting storylines amongst Terran players would be, like, Lucifron. I think I watch him play some games in some tournaments, and I'm like, this guy is one of the best Terrans outside of anything, including Korea. Like, and I know that's probably pretty sensationalist, but I do feel like he's just absolutely amazing. And in other tournaments like this one, certainly he's losing to good players. It's not like he's dropping out to a Masters player or something like that. It's just that he can get bopped every once in a while. I think his aggressive, a little bit abstract play can sometimes work against him, and we didn't see him there. Another Terran is, of course, the defending champion Thorzane. And I feel like Thorzane, to a certain extent, has the same kind of effect where some tournaments I watch him and I'm like, you are one of the best. Not quite as stunning as Lucifron, I might say. I'd say a little bit more consistent than Lucifron, but when I see Lucifron execute certain like mech builds in particular, I'm like, holy shit. But Thorzane fizzled out in this tournament as well, and he, again, lost to really good players, but when you're of that caliber of Lucifron and Thorzane, people go into a tournament like this expecting you to place in the top 8, 16 or so, and they didn't, so that's disappointing. And when you take those two big guns out of the Terran player pool, you're left with, you know, the ones that Greg mentioned, essentially. And then plus Straylock, I would say, and Happy. I think they both would tell you they had a disappointing tournament. So kind of disappointing for Terrans, but I don't know that it's a balance issue. I mean...
Oh, no, I wasn't... God damn, Jeff. Why do you got to make it a fucking balance issue, okay?
Whoa.
Just because Hellbats are fucking ridiculous and they can still be healed by medevacs and shit doesn't mean that we're trying to make this about balance. Let's actually talk about, before we talk about some of the good stuff and praise, there was another coin flip elimination.
Yeah.
And you know, like, in this day and age, it makes me sad, you guys.
Yeah, there's no way around it. In fact, speaking of Lucifron, he was eliminated by a coin.
Yeah, that's
They had a tiebreak, and then they did two tiebreakers. So they played the whole group, and then two rounds of, I think it was best of one, tiebreaking round robin, and they still remained tied. And we were already kind of running late. Like the entire tournament was waiting for that group to finish before we could get going. So they just did the coin flip, and I mean, from a production standpoint, they would tell you it's... None of them are like, this is the best answer. This is what we should do. No, they're all like, this sucks. In fact, they were laughing that Hellspawn had to go out and do it again because they're like, you're not high up the food chain enough yet.
The match is...
Yeah.
Ding.
But they were devastated. They were upset about it. For myself personally, I say, fuck it. You delay everything until that goes out because I'm kind of a competition purist. Like, I would never... want a tournament to be decided by really bad rules or things like that, and this is up there. Like if I traveled from Spain to Sweden, and I'm in a tiebreak situation that's a perfect tie, and they're like, "Well, we just got to flip a fucking coin," I'd be like, "Well, I'm gonna punch you in the teeth. I'm gonna punch you right in the head. Be pissed."
It is crazy, and it is in the rules. So Bishu, according to Chaz, the other player that's been eliminated via coin flip, and to be fair, it's not the first time in history that it's happened either. There were a couple of situations many years ago where the same kind of thing does happen, or it either comes down to a crazy stat that just it makes no sense why you would compare it, or it comes down to a coin flip. And I guess if the players were cool with it, that's awesome. But I'm with you, Jeff. Like, that would just be the most devastating way to take an exit out of a tournament for sure. So this was a WCS qualifier, Tier 1, if I'm not mistaken. But more importantly, I think that it reminds us all what missed opportunities are there in terms of the show that DreamHack was putting on in relation to WCS. Because once again, DreamHack remains consistent. I almost got to the point where, like, if I see another fucking DreamHack DJ, let me suck you off and circle jerk you all day thread on Reddit, I'm going to go crazy. Yes, it's great. It's fantastic. It always is. But once again, they sort of deliver. Jeff, you were there firsthand. Do you want to kind of talk about it?
When I think about all the tournaments that are going on right now, I think of what sets them apart, and I think certainly like Home Story Cup comes to mind as a tournament that's super casual. Everyone's hanging out in a house, and that's kind of its draw. When I think of MLG, I think of like straight tie professionalism. Like this would be what, you know, a really nice presentation of StarCraft. When I think of DreamHack, I think of a goddamn production. I think of a show. I think of something that people could watch and get excited about. And to each their own, but for DreamHack, it's really cool to be a part of, especially as a host or a commentator, because you feel like you're a part of something special. Something as simple as adding the LED light wall behind the stage, I thought made such a gigantic difference in terms of presentation. I like that they attempted to make the players kind of more superstarish by having them come out from behind the wall or walk down the aisle amidst the crowd. And by the way, as a guy that stood facing Jadong as he walks down that aisle, that shit's real, man. That guy's intense. He's a superstar. It was insane. But
I believe that.
The other cool thing that DreamHack has going for him, and it deserves recognition because this is actually real, the Swedish esports audience is actually perhaps the very best on the planet. They clap at the appropriate times. They cheer. They're motivated. They're excited. They ooh and ah at the right times during games. They, like, when things are getting tense, they're building tension. Like, it is such an amazing pleasure to be in front of an audience that gets your inside jokes, but then at the same time would support you no matter what. And then they also cheer like it's a real well-known game. Like, I felt we were watching soccer or American football in the United States. Like, everyone knew what was going on. And that's so amazing to be a part of. So DreamHack has the best audiences, and then they do the most work at putting on the best production. And so I feel like that's like a winning combo that's impossible to not please, I feel.
Oh, we haven't seen ESL's live WCS show yet. Like, they're still in the online qualifier stages, which, or not the qualifier stages, but they're in the portion of the matches that have to be played online. So it's much harder to actually make a production around that. So maybe they're going to step it up when it actually gets to the live matches and make it a show that's worthwhile. But the thing is, like, you shouldn't really be proving yourself on a stage like WCS. They shouldn't be aspiring for that when DreamHack put on that kind of show last year and consistently puts on that show. So, like, I don't know. I really don't understand how ESL got it over them, but we should at least give ESL a chance to do well.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. It's just, you know, like, that was one of the first things that came to me, Greg, when all this came down, is that, of course, first thought in my mind, and again, I don't want to sound like I'm beating a dead horse here, because I'm really happy with at least what I've seen so far. So, you know, when it came down to it, I think about the WCS EU qualifiers or regionals last year, and they were like astounding, and they were better than the finals. And so it's just a little burn. But you're right. Like, already what we've seen has been good. It does sort of mimic that GSL feel, and I know now we're kind of talking about something completely different. But I think in consistency, we can all agree that, like, DreamHack just continues to bring it. Like, I never go into an event going, I wonder if this is going to be a bad DreamHack.
No. It was really cool of them to... I mean, they always have Apollo. He's kind of their boy. And he's nice to pair anybody with. But it was cool to see Artosis back out there.
Yeah.
He, you know, is just a solid second half to anybody. And I was a little bit worried secretly. Obviously, you don't go out and worry about this publicly. But I was worried that with their two styles that perhaps... you know, because whenever, like, two of the absolute best are together, people are like, I don't know, which one do you think did better? Who won commentating? And I was worried that they'd be worried about that, but they weren't. They were totally relaxed and great, and nobody did make it about that, so apparently I'm a bit of a schizo, but...
You are.
I guess so.
For sure.
Real quick, Wheat, can I ask your permission to no-fluff something real quick?
Sure.
All right, so we're going to go back to why the Muslim's not here. And the actual answer, guys, is actually super fucking boring, but I swear on the grave of my first Labrador, Webster, that this is true. So Greg and Ben did have a scuffle. It was public. They're not happy. But they're both professionals, so we were able to do a show with them on it. But literally, moments before the show goes live, we were told that Ben's just, he didn't want to do it or whatever. He wanted a sub, so we don't know. We actually don't know. DJ Wheat, myself, and Greg don't know.
I literally, 5 minutes before the show, was trying to add the Muslim to the call. I have sent out plenty of Skype messages trying to find out what the fuck's going on. So guess what, guys? Your speculation, it's actually probably closer than what I know, because I don't know.
Yeah. So we don't know. The reason I'm saying this, though, is I got a bunch of tweets. The chat's still going crazy about it. Sometimes there is drama. I mean, actually, let's be honest. In esports, there's a shit ton of drama. But this is not really one of those cases. It's just kind of miscommunication. But we've already missed 2 weeks of Inside the Game. So if we could all please move along with the StarCraft chat. But that's it. That's all we know.
Like, well, now that I know, I'm fucking out of here. So what? It's not even interesting anymore. All right. Yeah. I think Jeff finally was like, I just can't stand it anymore. Let's actually talk about DreamHack and shit. So trust me, if we had reasons, we'd try to give him more. But anyway, that esports money, when the fuck did you shoot that?
Okay, so that's actually, that whole thing's a funny story. So they messaged me like 2 days before I leave, and they're like, Jeff, and this is like so typical Swedish fashion. Their producers and stuff. They're like, Jeff, how do you feel about American Psycho? And I'm like, well, it's one of my favorite movies. And they're like, cool. All right, we're thinking about doing a video. Hey, I gotta go. They're yelling at me right now about moving boxes and stuff. I'll talk to you in a couple days. And I'm like, well, I'm leaving in a couple days. He goes, all right, see ya. I'm like, okay. So I get there and I was like, what about American Psycho? And they're like, no, we're not doing that idea. We're doing something else. And I'm like, all right. And I mean, literally, when I step off the plane, I'm off the plane. I'm standing there, and they just each scene is them telling me, do this now, do that now. Off of, like, you know, no sleep whatsoever. But it worked out great. One funny side story that nobody will ever know, but we tried. I mean, I'm telling you what, this video is amazing, but if we would have caught this live, it would be top of YouTube. We're making millions of dollars. It's the funniest thing ever. So that scene where we're standing there looking over, like, the Swedish waters, you know, and he's like, Jeff, this could all be yours someday. Originally, we're standing there chatting, and I'm holding my ice cream cone, and I'm like, so what do you guys want me to do? And he's like, well, we're thinking about this. And all of a sudden, a force, like a fucking Hadouken coming down from the heavens, blows past my head and takes my, like, my arm gets like, whoa! And I'll tell you what, it's a weird thing, too. When you're, like, jet-lagged, not really, you're kind of tripping anyways. But I'm sitting there not expecting anything. Like, nothing's moving fast. Nothing's strange. My brain did not. It just fucking was like, I don't know what happened, Jeff. There's no fear. There's no alert. There's no shock. It's just that happened. You don't know. And I look over and, like, a 4-foot wingspan seagull is flying away with my ice cream cone. It goes away. And I'm glad this happened because the Swedes, they scattered. They were like, holy shit, and they're just like, they're gone. And I'm just watching my ice cream cone fly away. But the camera guy was just setting up his camera. So, like, if he would have caught this live, it would have been amazing.
It would have been on, like, America's Funniest Home Videos, YouTube.
So we tried to recreate it. We got another ice cream cone. That one you see in the video is actually the second ice cream cone. And now that the birds saw that we knew they were there, they would land and just fucking stare at us.
You actually look like a seagull right now. They can't see you right now. Will you do your seagull look one more time? Look at that. Mine?
Yeah, so we would do things like I would be like, man, you won't believe how unaware I am right now. And they knew. They wouldn't go near it. They're like, nah, that one knows now. Fuck him.
So, you had good acting. Robert, on the other hand, his acting was terrible because he just acted like himself.
Yes.
Yeah, so he doesn't actually have acting skills. He literally was just himself.
Yeah.
And then,
We drank a bottle of champagne and...
I could tell.
That was like, that video is 2 minutes and 24 seconds when we filmed like 5 or 6 minutes of us just like sitting there throwing money at each other and like...
And think of all the people that don't have any. Like, we tried to see a seagull going by. He's one of the ones they know.
Yeah, it might have been the one.
No, that's why Robert's is half eaten and yours is brand new.
Yeah,
I actually, dude, Jeff, I actually, when I watched this, I said to myself, why is Robert's ice cream cone licked down and why is Jeff's brand new? The thought actually crossed my mind.
It was delicious too, man. They actually make really good chocolate in Sweden. Not that that surprises anybody at all. But I had an absolute blast. That video, the funny thing to me is like, it was probably because I was really tired, but I would like walk down behind production and they're all in a room like crying themselves. Like, Jeff, come see the video. And I'd watch, and I was like, yeah, it's pretty funny. And they're like, what, are you mad? What's up? What? That's the funniest thing we've ever seen. I was like, it's okay. I'm sorry. They were really excited about it. But
they did a good job. I like all the content that they worked on. They did great. As far as the games are concerned, we had an exciting one. Let me bring up the brackets one last time.
They're always so lucky with games. They really are. Like Nanua making it to the grand final, Nanua taking it to game five, and then game five not being an absolute othering. Like it was a pretty... In the end, it was very clear that Leenok was going to win, but there was points in time there when Nanua was picking up his Colossus and moving it, and that I thought that Nanua could win. I mean, I think if he brings a probe with that warp prism and is building pylons instead of just using the warp prism, I think he maybe does win that game, and that would have just absolutely blown Stockholm to the ground.
Yeah, I think if he had a pylon next to the third, he definitely wins that.
Yeah,
I thought he was going to anyway, and he picked up the Colossus for the first time, and all the Corruptors died.
Yeah. It just the war prism barely got picked off, and that was kind of the end thing. Jadong is like an inspiration. His series against Gumiho, the crowd was second favoring Jadong. I can tell you that right now. Like he was treated like a legend there, and it was pretty cool. It was cool seeing Coca and Puzzle make fairly deep runs, given their story. They were paid from sales from the Dark Horse Project or whatever it is from Slayer's paraphernalia. And this was kind of them showing that they still got it, so maybe they'll get picked up by teams. TLO right. Making the run that he did.
Yeah.
TLO is a fan favorite. He had a good series in Nanua, but up until then, he was actually dominating, like dropping very few maps, actually.
One thing we never actually talk about much after these tournaments, but I think is probably appropriate considering that we're at Heart of the Storm and we're still seeing new stuff kind of happen all the time, but out of like the top 16 or any of the games that you might want to think of, anything you guys saw that was different, that was new, a strategy that we hadn't quite seen? I know there's a lot of talk about, you know, some of the stuff that Naniwa was doing, and you guys had the conversation about how that was really one of his builds. But of any of the games or any of the competitors, anything that you guys would throw out there?
The really fast two-base ultra stuff that Leenok and then in one game Jadong were doing in the semifinals and finals was pretty weird. And I don't think it's actually going to become a HOTS build. I think it's too kind of unique and weird for that. But that was definitely a HOTS thing because you couldn't go Zealots that fast. Just they got buffed quite a bit against light units, so you can't just spam Zealots to stay alive until you get the good units against them out. Because they just kind of tear through everything now. So the Ultra Queen rush was new. And then Naniwa had some unique builds, but that... I guess you could say with the inclusion of the Mothership Core, their HOTS builds, but like his one gas Immortal Zealot thing, that was a unique build, but it was all just Wings of Liberty units. And honestly, the Zergs didn't use too many Wings units. I saw maybe a couple of Vipers out of Leenok in one game, and they were using the fact that the Hydra's fast now, but I don't think we saw any Swarm Hosts in the last few ZVPs or anything like that. So they're basically just playing Wings, except, you know, with better units in some cases.
And Greg's not saying it, but his bitch ass recognized something else that Leenok was doing. And I know this because I played yesterday, Greg. Fucking Leenok introduced that you just kind of switch in and out of text like 17 times in a game. And it turns out that's really good for Zerg. And I think that's a really cool thing that definitely, it's not like this revolutionary concept that nobody ever thought of, but Leenok was executing on a scale that was very different. Like literally 20 mutas, and then the mutas would do their thing. The player would make enough Phoenix to kind of kill them, then Ultralisk Corruptor, and then that would do its thing, and then 25 mutas again, because the Phoenix are gone again. So that kind of concept of returning to mutas, not once, but a couple times, but then also not going like 75 mutas and Corruptors, where you give the Protoss all game long to fix their composition against that, that concept, I think, is really cool, really exciting, because... We're coming off of Wings of Liberty that was the absolute opposite of that.
Right.
We're entering into HOTS where there has been a little bit of that, but it's more been like Swarm Host based or I guess Ultralisk would be another one that gets kind of ebbed and flowed, but now we're seeing Mutalisk getting worked in that way as well, and I think it's different.
I mean, Greg, if you've experimented with this a little bit, what are the advantages and the disadvantages? Like, even from a gas perspective, does that just mean you have to hyper-take more bases and...
Yeah, it was best demonstrated Leenok against Naniwa in the Akalon Flats game. And basically what it is Protoss, if you let them sit and you give them economy and time, they can counter anything that Zerg does now, because you have Tempest against Broodlords, you have like Void Ray, Zealot, Archon, Immortal against Ultras, you have anything Templar-based for Slayer tech. all of that. But the problem is that you can switch back and forth between techs much more often or much more quickly. So you have two options. You either kill them before they get the economy to produce all that stuff. And we see a lot of mid-game all-ins from Zerg now, like Rush Hydra or just a quick Corruptor Rush with Hydraling under it or just anything to kill them before they get to that point. And then if you do get to that point, a lot of Zergs have just been dying. But like Jeff was saying, what Leenok did was he just kept switching techs around because, well, Protoss can counter anything, but they can't counter everything at once. They either have enough Phoenix and Templar tech to deal with that, and then they die to Ultras, or they have enough Immortals to deal with the Ultras, but then they can't follow the Mutas around their base, and they take too much damage and whatnot. So instead of just trying to make a super composition and match the Protoss' super composition, which usually wins, you know, it's situational and control-based, but I do think it has an advantage. Instead, he just avoided that entirely and just tried to keep the Protoss off balance. So it was... not a different approach, because tech switching has always been a pretty important part of the Zerg, because you do have the whole, you know, you have larva that makes it much easier to do. But just on that scale, like Jeff was saying, it's kind of a new approach, and it's really much more fitting for hot late game CVP.
Right on.
It was cool.
You were, you mentioned about, so you mentioned Aniwan. You are right. I mean, there was a lot of, like, Wings of Liberty style S play in there, but
I liked Nani. What was introduced? I mean, we've seen Gateway Expand as well, but he was doing a variation of Gateway Expand that had like five Zealots getting warped in at a really early point in time. So a lot of third hatches were getting sniped. I feel like that might be something coming out of Korea, and that's part of the reason why we were seeing the Zergs open that Ling Ultralis style that was very gas / two base heavy. Because I feel like perhaps because Nani was said that he's been training in Korea this whole time. I feel like if that's a build that's more popular over there, that you would see a lot of Zergs holding off on their third, because why throw down a third that you have to make a million Lings to protect anyways? Or if you go fast Roaches, a lot of times that's a loss too, because Roaches aren't quite as good.
And even it's Wings, like the Mothership core is making a big difference in that push, right?
Yeah. Well, part of the reason it's so much stronger is he's actually taking quite a risk early on, because he gets out his Mothership core, Cybercore, Nexus, all that before even getting a unit. And we saw in the Akalon game, it actually didn't work because that happened to be the one game that he went for Jeffy. But Leenok went 13 gas 12 pool. And if you do that and he does the Gateway expansion that he did all the other games, you kind of just die because he doesn't get a wall in with it even. Like, he just stays in his base and conserves as much economy as possible. And, like, six Lings get there before there's a Zealot, and then all of a sudden you have Speedlings in your base and no way to deal with it. So unless he has some kind of counter, it's just kind of a bit of a risky opening. But the thing is, most Zergs don't do that because it dies against Forge FE. So you can do it safely within the current meta, but if it becomes too much more popular or you get known for it, then it gets countered. So it does have some weaknesses early on.
Well, what I like about it too is it's worth noting that we saw this in a tournament atmosphere, and like you just said, Naniwa mixed in Forge Expand as well. So
yeah.
I like it as a mechanic in a best of series. I think that's really cool. If I'm a Zerg who's like, well, this guy can go Gateway Expand or can go Forge Expand, that really throws me off. Whereas if you play a lot of Protoss, you go, he Forge Expands every game, or, you know, no big deal. So they can start getting the advantage over them.
Yeah, it's definitely good to build in.
All right, let's actually go on to one of our other topics. The WCS standings have been updated. I've got them somewhere. For those that are wondering, it's a little bit better to kind of look at it from this point of view, I think, because a lot of people still sort of wondering exactly how it all works. But the way it breaks down by the points can be seen. This is all on Liquipedia. And currently, Leenok with his win, he won the Tier 1 event, DreamHack. That's 750 right there, sitting at 925. But it ranked across the board. So WCS has begun. We've got the EU sort of group stages going on right now. We have got the NA group stages. They've just started. And, of course, the GSL group stages continuing as well. You guys, we've been through a lot in terms of discussion of WCS. Last week, I had a chance to talk Cloaken about it with Total Biscuit and JP on State of the Game. Things have certainly settled down a little bit. But now that we're actually going, we're starting to see games, which I think is great, first of all, because that's what the fans are really looking for. But where are we at today with WCS overall? Well, from your guys' perspectives.
Itzik, who I guess WCS is his like little baby, he was actually in Sweden, so I was able to have a lot of conversations with him and sit in on conversations with him. Just a second, my dog is eating my wife's underwear. Barrison.
Oh.
No. Yeah, there's actually like bras and underwear up on this shelf over here, because once a day he goes in the bedroom and just grabs it and comes out. But anyways.
As long as he's not wearing them.
He came out wearing it.
If he managed to do that, I'd just be impressed.
Would you pick Barrison up and show him?
I'd set up a camera, though. We'd have like a – that'd be awesome. That'd be an amazing YouTube video, just him coming out every day with a new women's underwear on. So anyways, Itzik, I can't say his last name because I can't remember. I'm sorry. But he's just behind Mike Morheim, I guess, in Blizzard. He was talking a lot about this, and he fielded a lot of criticisms, a lot of the ones that we've talked about. He talked about them, and obviously I can't share those conversations, but what I can tell you is that whoever wins like this 750 points, which is Leenok, he'll be sitting at the top of that leaderboard all the way up until the end of Season 1 WCS. So I think that's kind of interesting. I think the points distribution should be looked at a little bit more, because I feel like – because here's the other thing. Like, so he won that. So, and I'm sure someone in the chat or somebody knows the answers, but what the fuck does that mean? Does that mean he can like drop out of his WCS group, but because of his points – he's invited to the finals anyways? Does that?
I didn't actually know other events gave meaningful amounts of points.
Yeah, like huge points. Huge. I mean, if you look at that board,
if he's going to be ahead until the end of the season, does that mean it has more points than MLG? That doesn't seem right.
Well, here's the thing that's funny about that too. So, from what I understand, points do not roll over. You can actually only cap out in how many points you can win per season, and then those points are added together. From what I understand. At the end for who goes to the world championship. So it's kind of like a – it's just a weird system. But here's what I want to say, because I'm actually always bad with numbers. There's someone in chat going, fucking host doesn't know everything. Anyways, that's going to happen. But what I want to say is I feel like one of the big blunders of WCS thus far is that we don't have a website that very clearly I could open up and say this is exactly where I get all of my answers. I don't want to go to Team Liquid to find this article. I don't want to go to – Reddit because someone was talking about it there. I don't want to go to this Q&A and that Q&A. I want a WCS website. We have a WCS EU website that was launched. Cool. We're going to have a WCS NA website.
Wait, was that launched by ESL? So it's not a Blizzard initiative. Because that was one of the things Cloak had said, is that that maybe some of the brought on IPL staff was focusing on a page.
It's absolutely. Like,
that's great. I do think we need it sooner than later.
I feel like that should have come up.
That
should have been the way this was launched, was through their website.
It should have kind of come up with the announcement.
Yeah, I mean, it's no
doubt.
The
problem was they didn't have all the information.
Riot was guilty as well. No, go ahead, Greg.
Were they? I thought the LoL Esports page went up pretty early.
LoL Esports page went up pretty early, but they did not necessarily launch with it. Would have been great to have during the qualifiers to sort of track that as well. Yeah. But I mean, like, Blizzard's in the exact same position. Not saying that anyone gets a free pass on that, but I mean, when you're going to have a qualification system that crazy, having a paid by numbers is pretty great.
I was watching the Good CEO show earlier today too, and they had a discussion that I thought was interesting on like tournaments have to submit their player pool and all that stuff to Blizzard, and then they hear back from them on how many points are going to be awarded to that tournament. But one of the scenarios they were talking about is like, well, if I'm the manager of such and such team and I have players and travel budgets, and one of the like reasons I would send them to an MLG that's not WCS, like let's say Anaheim now, would be how much points is awarded there, and is that more lucrative for me to send my guys there? Well, there's a chance they won't know until a couple days before. I think that conversation's interesting, but of course. If I look at an MLG, I'm probably assuming they're tier 1. It would be really weird if MLG's like, yeah, we only got tier 3 this time, guys. Yeah, didn't make it. But Zotac, tier 3 online, so make sure and attend that one. Like, it's not going to happen that way. But I guess what I take away from all this is I don't like the confusion. I don't like that this is – and this is going to bleed into our conversation hopefully we're going to have on, like, WCS NA that just happened in EU. I'd love to talk about that, but – I feel like there should be a website that everyone goes to this and says, In Control, you idiot. It's clearly posted right here. And you click on this link and it takes me there and et cetera, et cetera.
No, chat's just been bringing out details. There's no site with anything. But it seems like the first place of the Tier 1 events, the 750 points, is about equivalent to 9th through 12th place at the Premier events. So that's like not a massive deal. but it's still pretty silly that we just don't have like a definitive answer.
I'd really love to hear what the criteria are for the points. I mean, if you know, does DreamHack now get stapled with 750 points every time they have a competition, or is it based off of the number of competitors that are actually going to be there?
I have an idea, by the way.
Interesting. Oh.
If we need a Terran host, did you know that Total Biscuit plays Terran?
And he's British.
There you go.
Get on. Going to do the on-the-fly thing. But love you, John. I can see you in the chat. Chian. Yeah, so do you want to – I mean, do you guys have anything else to say? Because I'd like to talk about the presentation of EU and NA for these. I would field your questions first. I've been asking my Twitter like their opinions for a while. What do you guys think? Have you watched any of the NA or EU premier groups?
I've like had it on the background and like glanced at it once in a while, but I don't know. I just know that the EU presentation thus far looks pretty lackluster. It's just like them sitting at a desk in a kind of an empty blank room, and I don't know. The games are all played online thus far, so it's not going to be that amazing, but it looks pretty cut rate. I don't remember how the MLG production looked last night.
As far as WCS EU, I actually feel like it what they're doing at least looks different from some of their other content, which is good. The games so far have been, you know, enjoyable to watch. So I guess I've been pretty indifferent about the WCS EU. Having Todd as an official caster is fine by me. I got a lot of respect for that dude just from where he comes from and what he has accomplished in Warcraft 3. I don't mind listening to him at all. I know that there's some folks out there that have issues with Kolaris, and it's still decent competition. So
let's be honest, because I need to clarify. When I say issues with Kolaris, what I say is he's just not my style.
Of course.
But he's wildly recognized as a really good commentator that people enjoy. And I actually, as an update to even that, I've been watching almost all the EU stuff. Because I'm an egomaniac, I'm going to take credit for this.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm going to take credit for it. So I think because everyone watches our shows and takes everything I say super serious, because what I say is obviously really important, a little bit of an Artosis moment here, Kolaris has actually scaled back his caricature. Greg's my interpreter for that word. What is the word, Greg?
I think you actually said it right, caricature. I can't say it either. I don't know why you did that.
I think it's because I always fuck it up, and then you try to say it, and then after I've fucked it up, now you can't. Anyways, he's actually, in my opinion, commentating his best commentating I've ever seen for him on these last few broadcasts. He has always been one of the best play-by-play guys, but I couldn't get past the, like, I don't know if there's any chance that he'll ever do it! You know, like this, like, ridiculous, super character, but he's actually toned that down. And then on the flip side, Todd has been working on his commentating as well, and I think they make a really nice pairing. Todd's always had great analysis, of course. One of his roadblocks is that he is a natural French speaker, so
yeah.
English is going to be kind of tough, or is a little bit tough for him. A good example is today, and this is not me making fun, it's me having fun with him, okay? Kolaris was like, he's just going to scoot on by into the base, and he's like, don't you mean scout? And he's like, no, scoot. He's going to scoot on by, and he's like, but he can't scout when he's already seen the base. And he's like, we'll get over this language barrier someday. It was awesome. Both handled it really well, but they're doing really great. Word on the and I feel like I could lump in WCS, NA, and EU into the same category. I'm happy that they stepped up from what was the like online qualification, obviously. But when I asked my Twitter what did they think about this, one of the like really common themes to come out of it, and I think this is really cool because it's, I feel like, very apt to the criticism that is deserved for these guys, is that they don't know that there was enough done to distinguish these broadcasts from anything they've ever done in the past. Like, it looked like it was just another ESL or MLG broadcast. And I feel like what my Twitter followers are getting at and what I feel like is missing for me as well, and I'd love to hear your guys' thoughts on this, is that I feel like if this is WCS Premier, this is something that should be the biggest of deals. Obviously, the offline qualifier is going to be their actual production, but this is still the one step before that. I feel like there should be all stops polled. I feel like this should be something we should record and then show to people and be like, that's the tournament that maybe you could get into to be famous one day, or that's the best that StarCraft can produce.
Yeah, that's
but right now it's not.
It is a good point. It's like an interesting perspective, right? Because it is companies representing their brand. And there's already not a lack of solidarity across how things look, and that's okay. But you're actually right. There is sort of a, like, you know, you could blindly show anyone that's into esports. You know, you could blur out all the logos and stuff and be like, what organization is this from? And they'd be like, well, that's ESL. And what organization is this from? Well, that one's obviously MLG. I guess I never really thought about it that way because, you know, partially I'm very objective in just saying I just want to watch good games. You know, I want to watch Nesty versus Minigun tonight. So I guess I just subconsciously aren't going there going, I need this to look different than everything else. But now that it's been said, it's like a cannot unsee.
Yeah,
it really does not seem any... Like, even NASL, they have a lot more experience with online stuff and trying to make it seem like an actual important thing. It feels like the regular weekly NASL broadcasts were actually kind of more special and more important than these. It looks just like the everyday broadcasts from MLG in particular. Like, there's no player interaction, there's no interviews, there's nothing like that. They did text interviews with us, but it felt like just a template emailed out beforehand. Everyone answers the same 7 generic questions, and then... I don't know if they even put it up during the broadcast. There's no real graphics that I saw. They have the map intro, and that's about it. It's very, very underwhelming for what's supposed to be Blizzard's answer to esports. Like, it feels like it should be more special.
And EU did do interviews with all of the winners after the show, which, I imagine that's a good way to just kind of extend the content, and we don't hear enough from the players.
That's actually one thing that I've really appreciated about ESL so far. They had problems, like in the online qualifier, they started out with problems, and every time there's a next event or a next thing, they fix it. They're obviously trying to improve it and step it up. Like, I believe the Skype interviews were a new thing today, like they hadn't done that before. So, like, they're constantly progressing, whereas MLG, it feels like Sundance's apology afterwards, it was just like, well, I'm sorry, we messed this all up. That sucked. We shouldn't have done that. But there was nothing about how they're going to fix it or how they're going to improve it. There's no addressing... like actual addressing other problems, just acknowledging that they happened. So it feels like ESL at least is definitely trying to improve and get better, whereas MLG is just kind of coasting along with their same day-to-day broadcast. It's just different content on it now.
Well, the only other thing I'd comment on for the WCS to kind of wrap things up is that I do expect the WCS to find sort of a tempo and a cadence that it's comfortable with. You know, it started this season with everything sort of out of whack, and I don't know if they plan to synchronize everything as they go into season 2 and 3. Seems like that would make a lot of sense to me. But I am glad that at least some of the games as they're playing out, you know, there's a lot of good StarCraft on the horizon. And you know, that's obviously something that's important to me.
I think to piggyback off Greg's point and what you're saying here too is like, the game should always be good, but as long as they're willing to adapt and evolve, that's the name of the game right now, because it's no question that this has been rushed. Everyone from every party will tell you that. I'm sure Cloaken said as much maybe not so many words on that last day of the game with you guys, but that is the nature of the beast. So now it's about how well can we adapt and evolve, and Greg's right. I think ESL has taken steps to do that. I would actually say that I think MLG has taken steps in that direction as well. Their last qualifier actually went off without a hitch. That one that was running at the same time as DreamHack, like I saw very little complaints from that. In fact,
because everyone was watching DreamHack.
Well, there was that, but it was funny because that actually happened and nobody said anything about it, which I guess is as good of a response as you could hope for after that first qualifier. So they have their Challenger one coming up on the 4th. We'll see how that goes. But as long as those things continue to smooth out, that's good for me. I think what people should be doing, though, is continue to have high expectations for these productions. Because, in my opinion, if I were to grade MLG in ESL's broadcast of the Premier Group so far, I would give them like a solid C+. Like, nice studio, the casters were great, they're well suited. ESL blew our minds with interviews after the groups. But like. And then I guess Axelab did a little bit of touchscreen. That's kind of MLG shtick on one as well. But I got to be honest with you. My expectation for this kind of stuff, and what they would tell you is budget. They'd always come back and be like, it's hurried, and there's no budget, so this is the best we could do. That's fine, but you should hear from the community that we expect better from you, because that's the kind of community StarCraft has. We should very rarely be like, that was one of the best productions ever. And I think we've been able to say that about, like, 1.5 IPLs and a few DreamHacks, and I feel like those are deserved of so.
Maybe that's why I just start to care less about things in production except for audio and more about the games themselves. I mean, audio problems are, like, the one thing that will make me turn shit off.
Yeah.
You know, there's a video or someone, a graphics, and I'm like, whatever, you know. It doesn't have motion graphics. As long as the games are okay. Audio is the one thing.
I think most actual esports fans will continue to watch through a bad production unless it's something just directly annoying like that. But the thing is that you don't get all of the appreciation threads, and you don't have this product that you can go show your non-esports friends and have them be like, wow. I think that's true. The important
yeah.
thing.
Yep.
I think the big criticism will come with the offline thing. So they just announced Bitterdam and Axelab will be doing the NA one. The EU one has not been unveiled yet, but it's a pretty good bet that it's probably going to be Apollo plus, I would imagine, Todd, Kolaris, some kind of combo of that. Those are all great commentators. Each of the studios have the makings of it. But I need to see something big. I really do. I'm not expecting 100,000 people in audience. That would be silly. But I want to see a host going through providing content. I want to see long interviews and downtime. I want to see it doesn't have to be funny. I don't know that these tournaments should be funny, but it should be like constant StarCraft content. This should be our Cadillac. WCS should be the thing. We walk in the door to our parents' house and say, I'm inside that. I hit that every night. But right now, it's the kind of thing that we like on Facebook but don't really talk about publicly because it's not there yet and it might be illegal.
Can we just talk briefly about WCS Korea and what has been billed as the Group of Death? We've heard that thrown around many, many times before, StarCraft II and even before. But for the round of 16 group stage, which would be this is the challenger, right? Let me make sure I get this shit right.
Just so you know, by the way, I base my analogies off of your reaction, and apparently I just fucking hit it out of the park because you're so stunned you're not even saying a word. I appreciate that, Weed.
Your analogies are always good. Sometimes they elicit a hearty laughter. Sometimes they have my own internal emotions, like, you know, just condensing inside, not wanting to really let themselves out. And no, so,
I'm cool with it, man.
All right, let's talk about it. Parting Life Innovation Flash are playing not tomorrow night. Actually, yeah, tomorrow
Back
night
through.
For us. For us.
Someone made a cool graphic on Reddit. Let me see where it is.
Tonight we have SOS Bomber, Tasia, and Shine.
Oh, that was last night.
Oh, that was last night. Oh,
yeah, watch that.
Jesus. Yeah, I guess I should note that there's fucking numbers right next to their goddamn names, Jeff.
It's number 12 on Reddit on StarCraft. Go look at that graphic because it has their little interview after the group is selected.
Yeah.
That group is so fucking hilarious. It's deserved of the credit that it's getting for how funny it is.
Is it just Life First Parting banter or is there other stuff?
No. Parting picks Life, says, I don't care. I knew this was going to happen anyways. So I'm going to get out. Life picks Innovation. Innovation picks Flash. It's literally Parting Life Innovation Flash.
Yeah.
It's really only missing Rain. Like, maybe... I don't know who you'd take out to put Rain in, but... That group is disgusting.
Mm-hmm. I just really hope that Life First Parting is a good game, so I'm really worried that Parting is just going to two-base Immortal in him with Time Stop, and either it's going to work or it's not.
Yeah.
And most likely it's not going to work in a really stupid way. Like, Life gets Lings in like he always does, and then it just falls on his face. I'm worried those are going to be shitty games. But Flash First Innovation, when they played at MLG, those were really, really good games.
I love TVT right now, minus the Hellbat drops that are plaguing it. But
especially with those two, it should be sick.
Should be really sick.
These quotes, I think I like. The Group of Death was already formed when it was my turn to pick, so I just completed it by picking Flash.
Yeah.
It really is crazy to think that two of these guys just, you know, Peace out.
Is that tonight? Poor Anna.
No, it's
tonight
night.
Or tomorrow. No, we already went over this.
Okay.
It's tomorrow night.
But the memory of a fish. I almost said fishbowl. I guess that'd be worse. Yeah, the
no
memory of a fish.
No memory at all. Zero recall. The opposite of total recall.
Yeah.
Did Group A happen last night? I can't find a thread about it.
Which one?
Yeah, the one that I thought was happening
Bomber?
Tonight.
Yeah. SOS made it out and
Bomber.
And Bomber.
That makes sense.
Which is interesting because Bomber looked pretty bad in his first series, but then 4-0'd his way out of the group, so apparently he fucking turned it on. Hit the nitrous on those medevacs for himself. SOS looked good, by the way. I know we're not really a big results show, but just talking about Protoss play, I think he's one of the up and coming. He's been up for a while, but he's just a crazy good Protoss. He played it really well. A good mixture of timings and cheese, and then strong macro play, which is the best Protoss in my opinion.
He was one of the first Kestrel players to like be good at StarCraft 2. Like he was one of the early ones. Him along with I don't know the other ones.
Yeah.
And Group E for America is on now.
All right. Nesty versus Minigun first series.
Yeah. And if you're saying spoilers in the chat, man, I don't know what the fuck to say, man. It's the wrong fucking show, brother. All right, so let's talk about. Let's see, we got that. We got. Let's talk real quickly about Shoutcraft NA.
Yeah.
God, I butchered the name like three times today. There is a list that has been posted pretty frequently on the blog of sc2links.com. You can go over and check it out. A lot has been said. They basically show the current standings, talk about whether or not you're a barcode and you want to be eligible to qualify. And then you could go ahead and see the rankings, whether or not you're eligible, and then, you know, points, et cetera, et cetera. If you've not heard about this or understand this, and I do think that these are actually a different color for who is eligible or not, but on my monitor it doesn't look that way. So if you're living under a rock, the way this is work is if you are a North American citizen and you could prove that, then you can compete in this 16. But it's the top 16 snapshot. And when do they close this?
Tonight.
Tonight.
The new ladder starts tomorrow. Or
that's right.
So, yeah,
that's right.
Tonight isn't midnight. You know, you got all day. But
right.
The basic the first thing that should ever be said about something like this is, and actually to give this the appropriate weight, I'm going to do that thing that you're not supposed to and dig up my own dirt a little bit.
Uh-oh.
Way back in the day, I had been outspoken about saying pretty nasty stuff about Total Biscuit, one of which included that I felt like he had moved into this space just for the money, which at the time I thought I was pretty right about. But one of the most absolute gigantic fuck yous that just like celestially came down on me that was very obvious that I was so wrong that I couldn't be more wrong was about the second or third time he hosted a tournament where out of his own pocket he's putting up tens of thousands of dollars and then innovating the scene by including things like tip jars for players, encouraging innovative play and just supporting players in general, electronic jerseys, getting other team sponsors more recognition, and just in general hosting content and creating tournaments that is for the betterment of the scene. And it was from that point in time that I stopped being a jackass, and I more became inspired by him and his wife, by the way, which is I'm actually guilty right now of doing that thing that
guilty.
I was going to snarkily make fun of everybody else about. But Jenna, his wife, is actually, from what I understand, the main person behind this. She's kind of putting it on. Her tweet that first night that it launched was incoming, like watching Total Biscuit get all the credit for this. So obviously it's a joint effort, and they're both the power couple of esports. But I just wanted to start off by saying I bow to you. I take my hat off to you because whether you agree with the rules or not, whether this is the best tournament possible or not, it has literally materialized out of two people giving back to the community that they have been a part of for so long and grown with. And that's absolutely fucking amazing. And that is awesome. And I hope someday I can be as lucky to be in a place to do the same. And if I do, I'll give all credit to them because it's so amazing that they're able to give back like that.
I just like the fact that they're innovating. They're doing something different. Like, maybe a tournament full of Americans actually isn't going to be able to support viewership. Like, maybe our scene just isn't exciting enough, but they're actually just willing to try something different and see. Like, they're not just running the same old boring tournament trying to get as many viewers as possible. They're doing interesting things, and like the tip jar and like giving back to the players. Like, they make, like, there's a lot of stuff they do that you can disagree with. Like, I think it's kind of weird that they opened up a Korean-only team. I think they could have done a lot more with a foreigner team, but they're willing to take those weird paths and do their own thing and do what they think is best. And I don't know. I think that's really respectable, and a lot of good stuff has come from it.
And I mean, for all those reasons combined, one of the reasons I'm very excited for this competition, as I told Total Biscuit on State of the Game, like, I think what excites me is that there was obviously a hole for this exact type of tournament, with all the discussions that came out on the thousands of shows that talked about it for countless hours. I mean, WCS got just shit on a lot for this exact thing, and for them, TB and for Jenna to come out and say, "Let's do this," you know, I think, like I said, I think it's pretty brilliant. So I'm going to be watching it the whole way. I know that we've even talked on the show before about there's some tournaments I'm not as interested in because the players that are going to be in it.
Yeah.
I actually don't care. I just want to know who, you know, the North America best out of these top 16 actually is.
Well, they want to grow it into something, too. It's worth noting. Like, if I had complaints about this, it would be that a couple weeks before the ladder ends, they're like, surprise, the end of the ladder really matters something. Which, that was their idea to try and make it about Americans anyways. Because if you just did an invite only or held a qualifier requires a ton of logistics. And then invites always have the problem of being biased and that kind of a thing. So this is okay. Obviously, what they've come out and said, though, is that in the future they'd like to have that established from the very beginning. They'll have more clear rules about win trading and all that shit that always goes on when you qualify through a ladder. Since the beginning of StarCraft time, ladies and gentlemen, I've been there. It's always gone on. And you know, a lot of people are like, why do American only? But to what you just said, it's exactly right. Like, no, Americans aren't the absolute best players, but if you're ever going to have a world where people look at Americans and expect two or three of them to come out and be the best players, it's going to be through goddamn tournaments like this that create an atmosphere where you could be an American and look at tournaments and say, I have a crack at making decent money. I should buckle down and make this my job. I should do this full time because I can. And I'm so tired of the same people that are like turning off this tournament, Americans fucking suck, that then look at a tournament like this and be like, well, they should have trained harder. If they want me to watch them, they're terrible. Like, I don't like the impossible cycle of negativity that goes around in the community about players that aren't the absolute best. So it's nice that a tournament like this goes on because it gives people more of an opportunity to rise up out of that and either be positive or at least enjoy the process of creating a world where potentially they could become those top tier players.
Do you think that is more of a reason to encourage people to watch this type of content? Because, you know, in a growing pool of players that is often dominated by, by Koreans, if there are region-specific things, and they do exist, like they happen quite, but if something like this were to get popular and Jenna was like, you know what, that went really fucking well. Let's do that again for the next season. You know, it went so well. Let's do it for two regions. Like, is that even more of a reason to convince people, you know what, check this out. It's going to be a good time. They're going to have the face-off interviews. Hopefully we get some good games. But that's, you know, just on top of all the reasons why you should tune into it.
I hope so. I think the fear is that it's just Jenna and John doing this. So there's only so much they can do. Like you said, they run a team. Total Biscuit has one of the most watched gaming channels on the internet. Like, those are huge things. So the idea is that this becomes successful. Obviously, they're not going to make buckets of money from that. They've both come out and very clearly said that. They'd like to break even, if possible, and prove that it's a successful model so that the model can be picked up by other people, like you said. Because I think a void that is being left here is that WCS last year was much more nationalistic. Mm-hmm. Vibe was the American champion. Scarlet was the North American champion. And it made for really cool storylines as we got to BlizzCon, but whatever the fuck that circle jerk was in China. But now with WCS, it's going to be the four or five foreigners that made it in and the 11 Koreans or whatever for the final 16. And that's not very nationalistic as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, it's definitely a hole to be filled. Like, even that was one of that's a lot of the complaints that are coming out about WCS is just that everyone's joking about NA is just Korea Part 2 and all of that. And even Blizzard's explicitly said this is to encourage competition within the foreign regions, and they're just not doing it really well. So it's great they're doing. My only complaint is just that I don't really like online competition to begin with, just because I'm not as good at it and I don't like it as much. But there's so many problems with it,
yeah.
And particularly when you add in the ladder environment where there's so many games being played, there's no direct observation of any of them. There's just so many opportunities to cheat.
Yes.
Like they've already came out and said this morning that they've caught people win trading or just doing like mutual draws to ensure their places on the ladder and whatnot. But that since it's not in the rules, they don't really feel like comfortable punishing them. And that's my one big complaint with the tournament thus far. It's like, this is their thing. They put up the money. They can be as subjective
yes.
as they want. And if anyone is going to finally come out and show the community that you don't put up with fucktards, just like you can
yes.
be smart, you can see something that's clearly wrong, and then you can do something about it, even if it's not explicitly in the rules, I think that would be what they can do with this. So I dislike that they're not taking advantage of that and they're not trying to set a trend there, because I think that's one of the big things they could push with this. But otherwise, it's just great.
Well, Greg, you're actually hitting on one of the speeches I've given in the past that I want to hit again, because Wheat has cited something along these lines before, but what Wheat didn't know is that there's an entire network of shit going on underneath the ground of this route, which is the most confusing way to put that.
What?
But yeah, I know. I lost it like halfway through there. Just bear with me. But so in the past, Weed's talked about tournaments where the in-control tournament, like if a guy's miles and miles behind,
oh, right.
I would just step in and be like, no, you're out. Thank you. We're not going to wait 10 minutes until you float your buildings in the wrong place. Like, you're out. Good game. The next stage of that is Sheriff in-control, which is like a universal god mode that I go into on the internet where – and this ties into WCS. If the community knows someone's cheating, if it's just there, you don't get to hide behind like, well, it's not in the rules that I can't – win trade, or it's not like you don't have proof that I was hacking in this tournament. Yeah, you caught me 2 days ago on the ladder, but in this tournament I'm clean. Fuck that. The sheriff in control walks in with boot spurs, okay, and a little star for a belt buckle, giant fucking cowboy hat, and I just start shooting people. I just knock them the fuck down. I go, no, you were caught hacking. You're out of my tournament. And they're like, but in the TOS, and then I bitch slap them. And then like another person's like, well, you don't have 100% proof, and I'm like, actually, you blind counter the fuck out of something, and then in chat you mentioned that everyone hacks, and why shouldn't you? And they're like, well, that's not proof, and then I bitch slap them. They're gone too. Like we need to stop with this idea that on StarCraft, in this day and age, that you have to have 1,000% proof. Like if everyone knows what's going on, fuck the rules, fuck TOS, fuck what you think is right, you just get rid of them, because I'm tired of that shit. So I commend John and Jenna for being as cool as they are, but when they're like, well, in the rules it didn't say you can't win trade, it's at that point in time when I stand up and I just start machine gun bitch slapping everybody in the room like there's no tomorrow.
And to say that, you know, you don't need 1,000% actually makes it sound kind of worse than it is. It's not like these people are just like, oh, we think he hacks. His play looks suspicious. There's people who get by just because there is no way to actually have 100% proof. Everyone is absolutely positive that
yeah.
it happens. But if they don't admit it, then you can't really prove it, because we're not allowed to use software because of Blizzard. So, like, we can't look into what they're running on their computer while it's happening.
Right.
And there's no way to just look at the game and say, okay, here's 100% proof, even if you don't know what's going on. But
yeah.
everyone knows, and it is essentially 100% proof. That's just being written off because of those technicalities. And people just need to understand that that's not reasonable.
So I talked about this a little bit last week, but since we didn't have a show, I didn't get a chance to tell you guys. But I had run into probably like I think it's only happened a couple times on Twitch. But I saw a tweet, you know, hey, Wheat, check this out. Some guy's totally hacking on Twitch, whatever. So I tuned in. And I watch him lose, which was good. I was like, I have to finish watching this game before I TOS him to see if he loses, and he did. But, I mean, it's just totally fucking ridiculous to see what someone who, you know, has the full suite of hacks can actually do, to the point that this douchebag actually went in and, like, gave himself all the achievements from the single-player game. I'm like, fucking really? Like, of all the things that you're going to do, like, that's what – anyway – I do have to say, because you were talking about proof, I wish more idiots who hacked would stream, because it appears that that was enough for Blizzard to be like, we see his username, this is like undeniable proof, we can do it, and we were told that it was taken care of. But then there's so many other instances where someone has a replay, and I'm, like, watching it. I'm like, holy shit, you know. I don't actually see the hacks, but you can just watch their camera and at least get a pretty good idea. So, you know, I wish there was just an easier way to find that concrete proof, because that sucks that everyone else gets punished because it's sort of wishy-washy.
Yeah.
From the Blizzard hierarchy of things.
And it should be like a tribunal. You know, like a tournament tribunal. You'll grab some people from MLG and Team Liquid or whatever, just different places. And it's just people that are plugged into the community and they know their shit. Because like that Physics League guy at WCS, everyone knew he was hacking. And he had someone else playing on his account from Poland, which is fine. Because in WCS, you could play, you know, from a different country. But the bottom line was he was signed up. Another guy was playing on his account and hacking to boost the account better and easier.
Right.
And that guy knocked people out of WCS, and you know, MLG will come out and say, well, we invited those people back in for the next qualifier. And that's nice, that's a band-aid, but that sure as fuck is not the fix, because hackers aren't looking to qualify for offline things. They're not looking to qualify for things in general. They're just looking to make a stir. They just want attention. And if that guy enters a tournament and I have my tribunal or sheriff in control on hand and they look at that and they go, oh yeah, he was caught hacking, fuck him, and then he's just gone, zero attention. And they go away. There's no incentive. But now we're on talk shows talking about it. There's people eliminated. Blizzard came out and talked about physically. If I'm a hacker, I'm like, Blizzard talked about me. Maybe they're my friend now. You know, like, that's the shit they want.
Well, it's certainly a bit disgusting. The moment I saw, well, the production tab alone is just mind-boggling, but the moment I saw a giant text prompt on the screen that is like, your opponent is building a spire, I was like,
they have that?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. Dude, I was like, holy shit, man. Like, every major building, your opponent finished plus one. I'm like, fuck, you know? I just, it's fucking insane, man.
Oh.
I know. Rid the world, man. Rid the world. Let's do our last topic, and then let's take some open phones here.
Let's do it.
Meanwhile, I'm watching Minigun versus...
Fuck Recall.
What? Yeah, you're watching
that looks
too?
So silly. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Let's go to this. So there was this was about a week ago as well. There's some rumblings. We hear about this every once in a while, right? By the way, I hate the fucking Dark Zealots. Like that. I think
all the skins look pretty bad. Honestly.
I just want to, yeah.
Hey,
I,
our pylons look so good, man. They've got like
the
three extra spikes.
The pylons do look good. They're the only thing.
No, who gives a fuck about pylons?
Like the pylon, like I don't, yeah, I don't know. But the Zealots that look all dark and stuff. Sorry, I'm watching MLG.
They're Tron Zealots.
I think the Zerg skins are even worse. Like, the Overlord and the Zergling look terrible.
Oh, I don't use the Zerg. Like, I fucking can't.
Yeah, if I play against someone...
Your Ultra's got, like, five extra spikes out of that shit, man.
You only get that if you buy the, like, Collector's Edition.
Oh. I don't play with that shit on. Well, I mean, on me.
I automatically think less of my opponent if they had those skins.
He's so trying to compensate for skill by putting a fin on his Zergling. Oh. What a dick. All right.
Greg's opinion of you has lowered even lower.
Didn't think that was possible.
And when they have their map hacks on, it actually comes up as a text prompt on the screen. Like, Edra thinks you're a dumbass for using the Zergling fin.
Like, his brow has furrowed increasing.
All right, so Blizzard on Battle.net has posted that they're talking about some changes. They say, we hope to have more infestors come into play in the mass muta versus muta battles. Bring back the fight more to the ground because it'll be more easily possible to stay on the ground due to less resources on defense and defend off muta stacks, whatever. A few other things we're thinking on, but are not really even close to final on, are Oracle movement speed increase. And then it reads, to really reward high-skilled usage of Oracles, even when air units are in play, it could be possible for the highest-end players to perfectly use Oracles without losing them.
Wait. Yeah. Your Zerg bias is stopping you from getting to the actual interesting one. We can talk about Oracles a little bit.
Okay.
But the actual interesting one is that they want to buff Spore Crawlers again. Which, to me, means that they either two-shot mutas... Or they one-shot motherfucking mutas. And I gotta be honest with you, I'm liking that world.
What?
I'm liking a world where Spore Crawlers are just like... It's like in movies when the Sam moves over in the airplane, never stood a fucking chance. Like, it wasn't a question, did it kill the airplane? It was just a question of, like, how close is the crash sequence to reality? So the spore crawler is already such a strong answer to Mutalis, and they're like, you know what? Maybe to fuck Mutas over more, we just make this thing god mode. And it's just like, you're dead, you're dead, you're dead, you're dead, fuck you, fuck you, fuck you, fuck you, like, just, and the other guy's like, oh my god, what do I do with my Mutalis? He's got a spore crawler.
Well, I was going to do that one last because I figured it would be a good point of discussion, but I'm glad I got to see your, you know, your dance interpretation, right, of the spore crawler. My question would be, is like, what's going to stop everyone from just, like, auto-making that and then we never see Mutas ever again?
I don't honestly know if it would actually address it, because when your opponent goes ground and you go Muta, you don't care. You just do the thing that counters the ground, except you have map control and a faster economy. Like, you don't keep going Muta if they don't go Muta. You only keep going Muta when you both go Muta, because Mutas, you know, they win. But when they're not, like, the spores already keep them alive. You're not going to go in and kill them with the Mutas. So buffing the spores even more, it just shows that Blizzard doesn't really understand the problem. The problem is the map control and the speed and the health regen and whatnot. And you're not going to fix that with the spores. You either need to make Infest, like Fungal, not a projectile. The other option would be make Hydras not die immediately to speed banelings, but you can't do that without messing up too much other stuff. And I don't know if you really want to buff Infestors again, because then we get back towards Wings of Liberty, which sucked.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I guess the best option is probably nerfing Mutas, but then that affects the other matchups a lot as well. They just kind of have themselves in a really tough situation, but buffing spores just... The fact that they're even considering that shows that they don't really understand why Mutas are a problem in the matchup.
I mean...
I think a kind of cool answer... I've got two answers, Wheat. Okay? A real one would be maybe tweak the build time of the Spire itself so that there's a larger window of time where other strategies could be a little bit more viable against them.
When you say you said tweak the build time?
Yeah, so like
as in making it longer?
Yeah, it takes longer.
Okay.
So that would be interesting. And then my actual, I think this is a lot more far-fetched, but I think people should bear with me because I think it's actually the coolest idea they may have ever heard. And I've said this a few times, but I can't tell if I said it publicly. Yeah, man. When two Zergs are in the same game, Scourge are unlocked. I think that would be sick. I think that would be so disgustingly awesome. But that's never been done by Blizzard. They've never had like a... In this matchup, such unit is unlocked. But Scourge, Mutalis Micro was some of my favorite shit in the entire universe in Brood War. And ZVZ right now is just fucking Muta versus Muta, and it's who has more, who has stuff around it, who's got the better upgrade, which is all really bland. There's not really Micro involved. But if you're Microing against Scourge, then the matchup becomes more skill-based, and I'm really excited about that.
I think someone did. I don't know if I read a thread on this or it was on Reddit, but someone actually did suggest... That would be kind of interesting because I actually love your idea, Jeff, right? Because it doesn't fuck with the other matchups and it dynamically changes it enough that we'd see different ZVZs. Someone suggested being able to blow up overlords while banelings are in them. So imagine like how that could be interesting and not only a ZVZ, but that could also be across the board, man. It's like, you better shoot my homies.
Just imagining like, what that would look like.
I think it was
I've found his form of overlords. I'll just use my Mutalis to... What's this?
Like, what? That would be the best fucking bait in the world, right? Like, they're going in. But with all the you know, the airplay, I'm down with this idea. Whatever.
Just as long as it made the coolest sound ever, like just like literally fat guy exploding. Just like... And it's like a Nidus worm where you can hear it anywhere in the map.
Like, oh shit.
Oh, there's overlords blowing
overlord
up somewhere.
Just died.
And you're like checking around, you're like, I don't even have units. I think he's just doing that for fun.
Well, Blizzard, if only. If only you'd listen to Inside the Game.
They do.
I think they do.
They do, I know. Do.
It'll be like the Supply Depot is actually going to show up in the next patch.
The what?
Like the Supply Depot? Like that idea came from the community. Someone was like, they should be able to raise and lower Supply Depots, and all of a sudden it was in the game.
Yeah.
So we're going to have that with Overlord Banelings now.
If Overlord Banelings get in, I'll officially, every word that comes out of my mouth about Blizzard will be nothing but unbelievable praise.
Let's just say this, by the way.
What? Marines have 30 damage? That's fucking fantastic, Jeff.
All right. Joking aside, though, ZVZ needs fixing. It's pretty boring the way it is. There are exciting games that come from it, but it's... And at least it doesn't take an hour and a half, but it's just not what the matchup could be. I think we all agree that buffing the Spore Crawler would be a very silly way to go about that. And then, of course, nerfing or buffing Mutalis or Hydralis would be a silly way to go about that. And also, as we've said a million times in the past, Blizzard tread extremely carefully when talking about balancing the Infestor because, my God...
they done goofed last time.
The future of this game hangs in the balance. Like, please.
By the way, are we you?
Yeah, that's it.
Okay, Greg, you'd mentioned the projectile change. I've been watching a lot of Zerg streams, and I got to say, I've been seeing a lot of bad fungals. Like, I take it you're not a fan of the projectile.
I don't know. I don't mind it too much in the situations I use it, which is usually to just, like, a handful of them to lock down a Protoss or Terran army. I never go with them versus Mutas. But, yeah, against a fast air unit, it can be pretty hard to hit. But overall, I don't think it's that bad. It's just bad enough that it's not worth the risk to go with them. Like, it used to be if you went Infestors, if their Mutas went in your base, you killed the Mutas. Like, they died. So that was well worth the investment. But now it's like, maybe I'll hit it. Maybe they'll dodge it. Or maybe I'll miss the follow-up or whatever. I won't get all of them because it'll be just a little bit outside the hit. It's not quite as good, and that's enough of a deterrent that the Mutas are then better. The bigger problem, actually, I didn't talk about this before, it didn't come to mind, is that the nerf versus armored, because Infestors can hold off the Mutas, but then you have a lot of trouble holding off a Roach follow-up because Infestors don't deal as much damage to the Roaches anymore. That's the much bigger problem with that situation. It's not so much that the Mutas actually beat the Infestors directly.
I love the projectile change on.
I think it's a good thing. It feels much better when you actually hit one. It feels like you did
something. I feel like you appreciate fungals now. Like when life nails that range 10, boom, like middle shot fungal, you're like, holy fuck, that's amazing. Whereas in the past, it was like, everything's covered in green, and that's just the way it was always going to be.
Yeah.
No, I think the projectile in itself is a good thing. I'm not advocating that be changed. I'm just saying that's one of the ways you could help deal with it. And I don't think it's a good way to do it.
And I think that, if it means giving up range for that, I don't know that I'd be a big fan of that. I think the range is actually sitting pretty good right now. But what was the other
Oracle? You would start to rant about Oracle.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Oracle speed. And then the Burrow, I don't know if you guys want to – are you even seeing Oracles that much? Greg and Control, like, I think that this would kind of be more deadly to the Terran folk.
Oracles are an opening unit. Like, PVT, you open Oracle, right. And then whether or not you do damage, you either continue to make one or two more Oracles, or you're done. And then there's that one bust build that was popular during MLG and still gets executed sometimes, but it's certainly not, like, in a high percentile frequency of how much it's seen. And then in PvP, it's a very similar thing in PvT where you open Oracle... But then their response to the Oracle usually shuts down any kind of continuation of it. So it's interesting to me that they're even looking at the Oracle because I feel like it's a glass cannon anyways where it shows up and either like fucking wrecks face, which is awesome, or it doesn't. And then a really good player, and this is I think where Blizzard gets some legitimacy, maybe with a little bit more speed, a good player makes that into a very scary unit despite the counter to it.
Yeah, the only thing I fear it... Like, the only reason I would fear it in ZVP is because it's actually just so bad that, like, I never expected it to come. So then two Oracles show up, and you don't really have any anti-air. Then all of a sudden your mineral line disappears. Like, it does have that effect.
Yeah.
But if you're prepared for it at all, like, it doesn't matter how fast it is, you're not going to beat a Spore Crawler with it. So, like, if you're prepared for it. And there's not going to be any addition to it in terms of a follow-up unit. Because, like, if you want to do an all-in under an air unit, you're going to do a Void Ray. It works better for anything except for Harass. And even then, it's kind of better. So, like, I don't know. It's a weird change to be making to me from the perspective of a Zerg player, like, looking at the ZVP matchup. Yeah. I don't think it'll make much of a difference at all. The other matchups, maybe. I don't know. But it's just, I don't feel like anyone is really complaining about the Oracle that much. It was like, it's a kind of cheesy unit that every once in a while works. You can use it to keep your opponent off guard by mixing it into a series or whatever. It doesn't have too much of a place in the game. And like, if they had a problem with that, giving it a speed boost isn't going to give it that place. Right. So it's a weird change for me.
Like Greg said, it's like completely irrelevant PvZ. PvT and PvP, it's a very, you know, specific unit for what it is, and it's very much so early phase. In my opinion, if you wanted to see more Oracle use, the speed boost is not a terrible idea, by the way. I'm not like downvoting that and saying what a horrible idea, but I would like to see it maybe get a more late game spell, and obviously a non-damage dealing spell, but I think Time Stop on it was way too powerful because you could have 10 Oracles dropping Time Stop on everything. But something along those lines, a support spell would be kind of cool. And I know that it has, I think it's Revelation the Fairy Dust one, which is really cool, especially in conjunction with Tempest. I like that kind of play. That's where you're going to see more of it. But maybe like a Fleet Beacon upgrade that gives it something else that adds to the late game. Like a...
One Interceptor.
It just becomes an interceptor. No, it actually has that speed and whatnot.
Yeah, maybe it self-destructs. That'd be kind of cool.
There you go.
But I don't know.
Okay with that. Fly in.
You could call it like reactor overcharge, and it flies in all like electricity-like, and then blows up on something. And it's a 150 mineral, 150 gas baneling that does more damage.
I don't know. I don't want to slap you in the face, so I guess it sounds good. All right. How about this one then, buddy? Burrow cost and or research time down. Towards the beginning of Hot's early burrow attack showed some decent potential, but we never see it anymore, guys. We
thought it was right shit and people figured it out.
Yeah, especially on the Zerg that usually play defensive early game was cool. So we're wondering how early game Zerg can evolve if we made early game attacks using Burrow much more effective. And I'm wondering how Zerg can abuse Burrow against the other race matchups. And fuck the DBZ aspect of it.
The fact that it's on hatchery is enough. Like, Greg's pessimism aside, Burrow is actually awesome. Zergs just don't want to invest in it. I never get to my third and there's a Zergling Burrowed there. What I'm worried about is they buff it because they liked that for 1 week people were doing one hatch roach rushes with Burrow and like, if I kill the cannon, I win. Oh, and then it wouldn't work. And they're like, this game, dear Blizzard, I'm at the top of the Platinum Division and the Burrowed Rush attack doesn't work anymore. And I don't give a fuck about those people because that shouldn't be like, it's already possible, but you don't need to buff it so it's like a legitimate metagame concern. Like, well, I open up one gate expand triple cannon Robo into Nexus because of that Roach Rush. Like, nobody should be talking like that. Don't do that.
I think you're going to be sad then, because they explicitly said they like,
I know,
like the Burrow aggression out of early game Zerg players.
There's going to be one of those like really bad highlight videos of like, you know, like weird angles and like zooming in and out on a guy that microing individual Zerglings up and down against a Zealot, and they're like, check out the micro. And David Kim like will like watermark behind the scene and be like, I just really felt that with Burrow Micro you could really open up so much more Ghostly tactics. And then it's like this fucking Eastern European Zerg just one hatch Zergling brushing this Protoss into the ground.
All to a phenomenal dubstep.
Dubstep. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Dubstep.
Of course. No, wait. I take that back. Not a phenomenal one. The same one that MLG and Riot uses.
Is there more than one dubstep song?
Yeah, there is.
I thought they were all just one song, but you're just keying on a different part.
Now you're just being a dick, Jeff. Yeah, Burrow, sure. Make it 50-50. I'll get it every fucking time, man.
Damn it.
Burrow before gas, or Burrow before speed. Yeah,
it's
great.
Like 10 seconds to upgrade.
I can burrow now! Fucking A. God, that's like just giving Zerg another inject, practically. I mean, like another function like that. It could be dangerous, but...
Yeah, I don't know. It's a weird direction for them to be going. I don't see them making it an actual, like, important part of early game. Like, it can be good for annoying uses like blocking the Nexus, like Jeff said, or scouting purposes, maybe hiding, like, a counterattack or something like that. But I think if you get it to the point where it's actually a viable attack early on or something, then the game's going to get really kind of silly and cheesy because that is by its nature. So they're going to have detection or they're not. It doesn't make the units much stronger. So it's either going to be Terran or Protoss is prepared for it or they're not. And that buffs are going into the mid-game because it's like a good Terran or Protoss player will always have to be able to be prepared if they can't scout. And so then that kind of matters, but it's just... I really dislike things like that where it's either you're ready for it or you're not, and then either it kills you or it doesn't, and it's a wasted investment. So, I don't know. I don't know why they keep... It feels like the bunker of HOTS. It's like they keep adjusting these minor little things about it when it's not really the more pressing issue, and I don't know what their obsession is. Yeah. Like, why they think that's the key to the early game problems. I don't get it.
I think that was it for... And this was a week ago. They could come out and obviously change this.
Yeah, I hope they do.
I really hope they put a bit more thought into this. And it wasn't just a dartboard scenario. We've got about 20 minutes. We could take probably a couple phone calls here before we wrap the show. Thanks for tuning in. WCS is going on right now. In two games, Nesty is proxy hatched minigun.
Pretty cool,
I guess.
Minigun always goes next at first, so I wonder if he knew that and was just like trying to deal with her, if it's just common enough now that he was willing to go with that. It'd be kind of interesting if Nesty was actually scouting his North American opponent.
I'd
be honored.
You think you would? Yeah.
I'd be surprised. Like, Koreans don't respect foreigners.
Oh. Maybe that's why he's proxy at you too. Anyway, you guys can telephone 909-581-8519 or Skype me at DJ Weed. We'll take our first call. Norek is on the phone. Oh wait, one second. All right, let me adjust the volumes here so everyone can hear everyone. Hello, sir. Welcome to Inside the Game.
Oh, hi. Actually, I got through. I have a question about...
Yes?
About GameHard overlays. And I kind of get annoyed by the supplies and resources being at the bottom. I know the developer said that's probably the better option, but I'm not sure that's the case.
Norek? So, are you German?
Yes.
Thank you for your call.
Norek, is it just your eyes are trained and they don't want to look down there? Like you're so used to looking into the upper right all the time?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I played StarCraft since 1998, so I'm just used to it.
And are all the other benefits you get from GameHeart, they're not worth that one thing?
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's all right. But, I mean, like every 30 seconds at least, I find myself looking to the top right, looking at the supplies. I want to look at the supplies, but I don't see them.
And then you look down.
And then your eyes.
It's not a major issue, but...
Sure.
I mean, is it better or is it...
You know...
Is it better that they're at the bottom?
I think that at least my opinion is, I like it because I like to be able to see more of the playing field. And this includes, like, scrolling out a little bit. And maybe if you just scroll out, it's not that big of a deal. But I also kind of like the fact that I like the customizable approach so that everyone kind of does have a different look and feel. I don't know. I guess I haven't thought about it that much. I've never – you guys, what do you – Idra?
No, I played quite a bit of StarCraft, and I didn't really have any problem realizing that I had to look down instead of up to check the stuff. The only thing that really stood out to me was how much I loved the fact that they had little indicators for the upgrade levels. That was just so incredibly helpful as an observer.
Yes.
That was the only thing I really noticed about the overlay. Like, it looks nice, but that was the piece of information or the unique thing that I really, really liked. And I didn't notice the rest of it. I had no problem with the different positioning.
I'm still getting used to it, but one thing I would always put out there, and we actually talked about this when we transitioned from Brood War to StarCraft II, is that in some cases, and this may be one, less is more. I almost wonder if we have too much information available for a UI where when I watch a game and I literally have every bit of information at my fingertips that the GameHeart overlay provides, that a little bit of the mystique is kind of gone. Of course, a lot of that is up to the casters to create that excitement anyways. But I think that's something worth keeping in mind if you're an observer of StarCraft.
All right. Norek, thank you for your call. Appreciate
it.
Take care. Bye-bye. I'm going to restart my Skype, by the way, because no one's phone calls are coming in, just their Skype calls. You know, I might even argue, Jeff, that that might open up some possibilities, having more information. But, you know, we've talked about the whole concept of back in the days with Brood War, where there was less information you could build. And is that kind of what you're talking about?
Yeah.
I mean, that's definitely gone. That's for damn sure. I think it's now the now it's in, like, how many workers did he kill?
Right.
Let's bring up the and then that's basically the all the suspense that you're going to get. Sorry, I had to restart Skype, folks. And I think Goat Lust will be calling in tonight, so.
You will get your lust of the goat.
You will get your goat lust. God, Skype, man. Terrible. Just like to point that out a few additional times. anything else going on this week that we didn't address as I try to get the Skype back up? Yeah, me neither.
No, it's kind of nice because, I mean, we're all just going to watch WCS, and that Group of Death is tomorrow. Iron Man 3 comes out this week. Should be great.
Does it really? Holy shit, it does?
It does. It's going to be awesome. Greg and I are going to take our ladies out and some other friends, and we're going to go see it.
That's great. I love Tony Stark, man.
Speaking of ladies, Greg, I saw one in your webcam, and I just wanted to speculate that maybe it was your mom.
It is, indeed.
Yeah.
And I brought her here to do my laundry and cook for me.
Oh, my God.
Well, as the stream chat would wonder.
No, that I said it was my mom. She got mad.
Well, you know, chicks, man. Chicks. God, Wheat, hurry up and get back to the call.
I can't sign back into Skype, man. I don't know what to tell you, dude. I
want to, so while we're killing time, I guess, I'll answer the question that everyone's been wondering. Why did Jeff ask if that guy was German? Yeah, well, one of my absolute favorite German stereotypes is that if anything is out of order or, like, not the way it's supposed to be, and Germans will tell you this, for the most part, they cannot get past it. It crawls under their skin, and it bothers them a lot. So when he says he's been playing StarCraft since 1998, what he means to say is that it's always been in one place, every time, through vanilla StarCraft to Brood War to StarCraft 2 to now. And if someone changes that, it's like I don't know, it's German OCD. It's just insane. So when he called and was like, yeah, it's always in the top right, and when I look there, it's not... I knew what he was actually saying, which is, ah, like just going, ah, can't stand it.
I've signed back into Skype.
Nice.
What a piece of shit program that thing is, man. I tell you. Oh, man. All right. Let's take a call. Casey, hello. Welcome to Inside the Game. What's up?
Hello.
Hello, Casey.
Hello.
Hey, so... I don't know if you guys know, but the Team Liquid mapping contest is going on right now.
I did not know this. What is it, like, create a map on the fly? Is it playing on maps? Can you explain this?
Sure. So no, it's just a new round of the same contest that brought us Cloud Kingdom, Ohana, and Korhal Compound. You know, all the map makers in the community just, you know, make their best map. I think we have till May 10th, and we submit it, and various forces within Team Liquid will rate them, and hopefully I think a tournament happens at some point. It has a support from Blizzard, and then after that happens, hopefully they get put on ladder and then hopefully into tournaments. So my question is, your thoughts on the result of the last one, and perhaps your hopes for what you might see out of this one.
Well, didn't the last one produce, like, I want to say Ohana and a few of the maps that made it into the tournament map pool forever, didn't it?
Yeah, and Cloud Kingdom.
Cloud Kingdom. Well, then I put my seal of approval on it, and I think it's awesome. And I like the party.
What would I like to see out of more maps? Frankly, I'm a big fan of non-Zelnaga Tower maps. I don't think that we should have a whole, a shitload of them. But I would like to see another map on the pool that didn't have towers. But also had, like, clever ways to, I guess, get vision, whether that be the cliffs. And you guys know what map I'm talking about.
Yeah, Lost Temple.
No.
say that one more time.
I was just clowning on DJ Weasels. I would like... I don't know. I don't necessarily... I think one of the things about maps is... I don't know. I'm about to say that I don't like it when they try to reinvent the wheel, but as I say that, I do like some innovation in a lot of these maps, so definitely a little... I mean, the thing about when someone says, like, what do you want to see out of maps? I don't feel like anyone should be able to give you a concise answer. I feel like we should have diverse maps and different kinds of maps and big and small and medium. Less the small, though, because that creates Steps of War, which still burns in our brains. And a little bit of innovation, but... I'm liking the maps that have towers in cool places, and I'm liking the maps that don't have towers, because I think when it doesn't have towers, it requires a different set of skill than when it does. So, I mean, you can hear the confusion in my answer. I just like diverse maps, so I think it's up to you map makers to make it cool, man, not us. Boom.
Okay, so if you like diversity, then, I think this has been talked about before, but is the rotation on maps right now too stale, and should we have more of these contests? Because, for instance, there was the first one of these, which is, what, was like 2 years ago or something, and then now this one. So in your opinion, should we have these more often? You know,
sure.
Should a Blizzard sponsor this more often?
Yeah, have bi-weekly ones. I don't care. I mean,
or one for every season?
It's no hair off my back. I don't know. Like, why are we talking about the scheduling of map making tournaments? I have one a day. Have three a day.
Well, because for a Blizzard to officially go behind them and say we're adding this to ladder, I think is the significant.
All right. Once every 2 years. No, I'm just kidding. What? But I don't know. Like, once a year is cool. Well, twice a year, obviously you don't do it that much, but I think it's less. I mean, it's nice that cool maps came out of this, but this is not the only place maps came out of. Obviously, Kespa makes maps as well as, I want to say GOM, but maybe they don't. I just think there needs to be better map awareness, and tournaments like this are great, but it's not our only answer to getting maps into the ladder pool. So I don't think there should be, this tournament is your way to get a map into the ladder pool. I think it should be one of the ways that a map is into the ladder pool.
I think longer turnover is better. I feel like it's better when a map gets somewhat figured out and players are more comfortable on it, and you can actually just produce good, comfortable games instead of something just like unusual, uncomfortable. I'd rather have a quality map that's worth holding on to for a year or two than to have just constant innovation. So I don't think too short of a turnover is a good thing.
And when you
unless they like Pro League, I like when they have map turnover there, because then they're supposed to go and practice those maps, and
they actually play enough that it gets figured out pretty quickly. Yeah,
I like that. It creates better observing for us, but. I agree with Greg on ladders. As long as we get good maps, it's cool to ride it out for a year, intermittently.
Yeah. Casey, thank you for your call.
Thank you.
All right, take care. Bye-bye. All right, we'll take one more, and then we'll have Goatless. And the number's down because apparently I don't pay Skype enough money. they didn't send me a fucking email that says, yo, you need to pay us more money to keep using it, so I'll have to turn that back on after the show. My apologies if you've been rapidly dialing, and that's a few of you. So, all right, let's take, since we're going to have Goatlust on next, we're going to take Mighty Sheep before Goatlust. Mighty Sheep, welcome to Inside the Game.
Wow. It's like a farm animal theme amongst our callers.
Mighty Sheep. Mighty Sheep maybe, wants to show video.
Maybe he's too sheepish to answer.
I'm turning the video on because I thought I don't know. Hey, Mighty Sheep. What, now he's taking his headset off. Look, he's on. He's on with us. Right. Oh, he hung
watch.
Up. God.
Oh, son of a bitch.
He smiled, and then I was totally expecting it to be like a giant
dong. Neutral.
Just like a giant dick.
It's a good bet on the internet.
It is. It is.
A lot of times if you don't know what the picture's going to be, it's just a giant dick.
All right, let's do this one before Goatless. We've got Skolarion. Skolarion, hello, welcome to Inside the Game.
I was actually still laughing at you guys on stream. So what's up?
Laughing at us or with us?
Well, at your jokes, I guess.
Okay.
Right,
laughing
so
at us.
I guess I got a bit of a boring question, but
my favorite
in ZVP, like, I always find it quite odd when Protoss don't pylon block me. I was thinking, what is your guys' opinion on pylon blocking? And then especially also, like, blocking the third if you pylon block the natural. And, like, you send your drone to the third and they pylon block that. Like, I feel it really screws me over, because most of the time I put my hatches down, like, right when their nexus finishes.
For that to be the case, they also have to have gone Nexus first. And if they put down two pylons and go Nexus first and you went 14 pool, your Zerglings can kill the cannon or break the wall and get in their main, like, depending on how they try and deal with it. So, like, it isn't... I agree that it should always be done, but it does also require, like, an expenditure from the Protoss. It's slowing themselves down as well. Either that or they're playing very risky. So it's just a matter of recognizing if they're putting down the Nexus too fast, and if you should just send your six Zerglings to their base and accept that your expansions can be played and stuff like that to punish it. So, like, they can't go too crazy with it. But yeah, pylon blocking the natural, I think, should always happen. And then beyond that, it becomes kind of a decision-making process on both sides.
So you said with 14 pool, so with 15 pool, do the links still get there in time with the Nexus first?
It depends on how much they put down. If they do the thing where they put down, like, a pylon and then put down a cyber core to continue to block it and then pylon block the third base too, then obviously it will. But if they just put down the one pylon and maybe even the second pylon, I don't think so. I'd never try and send the Zerglings with 15 pool because it never seems to work.
All right. And then you just make, like, if you go 14 pool, you just send, like, a few extra links to your net to clear the pylon, I guess.
You can do that. It's also very good on maps like Planet S, where there's, like, two different equally good options for the third base, because they can't block all three bases. So you just go to whichever one they're not, and then you can clear your natural for your third base after a little bit.
All right. Well, thank you for answering.
You're welcome. Take care.
Hi.
All right. We're going to take Goatless next. The one and the only. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the show. It's Goatless. Hello, buddy.
Yeah, g'day, fellas.
Good fucking day. How's the weather out there, Goatless? How is the weather?
The weather's actually been pretty average lately. Not so great. You know, it's been raining a bit more than you'd probably like.
And
you know,
and do you ever find, like, snakes behind your TV or spiders in your boots? I've been seeing a lot of photos on Reddit from your neck of the woods where people are just like, hey, guys, I lifted up my chair and look at this fucking 10-foot snake was right there.
Well,
wasn't there one with a snake inside a PC?
Yeah. Oh, yes. It was inside the power supply.
If you've got like windows without, I suppose, a screen, you know, fly screen, security screen stuff, I suppose snakes could get in through the windows, which does happen to some people. I've never had it happen. I like to keep the snakes outside, you know, personally.
I see.
It's a little bit safer that way.
All right.
But
I'm just worried for you guys.
I'll let you in on a secret,
okay,
guys. Australia's actually not very dangerous at all, despite our reputation. It's like fucking piss easy to live here and be safe, I guess.
You know what? It's probably really easy for someone like you to say that when you walk down the street and see a random kangaroo wearing fucking boxing gloves that'll knock your ass out. It's like, yeah, well, it's probably not that dangerous because you can deal with it. You have been dealing with it your whole life.
The bigger issue is, like, you know how all Asian people know martial arts, like, just the way they were raised and trained as children.
Nice.
Australians are all, like, they all have one bill of their hat, like, taped up to the rest of the hat, you know, and they wear the knee-high socks to protect them from the jungle. And they were trained as trained as children to, like, watch out for trapdoor spiders and box kangaroos and shit, and, like, they could skin a wallaby in 10 seconds and wear it for sustenance. You know, like, it's insane. But as Americans, like, the only training we got when we were kids is how to run the planet and be the most powerful human beings ever. And in general, we find it really difficult to exist in, like, Africa or Australia, where people die from looking at the sun too long.
In other news, Goatlust won the most influential person in Australian esports award for his weekly calls on Inside the Game. Did you guys know that?
Are you being real right now?
I'm being very real.
The fuck is that?
It's an award I just gave you. Congratulations, Goatlust.
Oh, thanks, mate. Thank you very much.
I do like it, though. Every time there's an Australian event, because I love fucking Aussie, so I always check around the chatter, and there's always a few people like, maybe this time we'll see Goatlust.
Someone said they met you, actually. Maybe at a Barcraft or something.
Have you met someone?
Yeah,
from
mate. There was actually, must have been a few weeks ago now, seeing as you gentlemen haven't been having any shows lately.
Sorry, man. Sorry we didn't email you ahead of time.
I actually headed out to an event. I headed out to ACL Brisbane. Nice. That's one you didn't talk about.
Sorry,
and,
brother.
Yeah, it was pretty damn good.
And so did you have any instance where you met some dude and you're like, hey, I'm Goatlust? They're like, you're fucking Goatlust, holy shit! Like, did this happen to you?
Not that big, but I came up to Moonglade and I was just like, hey, Andrew, and I shook his hand and I'm like, yeah, it's Goatlust, and he's like, oh wow, fuck, really? Oh shit! But yeah. Yeah, I met a few people out there. It was a good time, and I recommend people coming out to that because there wasn't very many spectators on the Sunday, and it was good stuff.
Awesome.
So people should just man up and fucking actually rock up.
Man up and rock up. Yeah.
What is your question this week?
All right. So all this region shit got me thinking. A little bit, just a bit of a hypothetical question. If you were going to make a 5-man pro league sort of lineup, and you had to have like a player from each region, and to keep this from being a circle jerk, no more than one player from each team, who would you choose if you had to have one player from North and South America, one player from Asia? One
South
player
America.
From Korea, one from Europe, and then one from the rest.
I guess Juan's Mexican, isn't he?
Yeah.
That's tough.
I guess he is Mexican.
Are we collectively making our team, or you want three different teams? Because I think we should just collectively make our team.
Yeah.
Inside the game, pro league team, we will win because we're the only team in it, but we need a representative from each region.
I still say Juan from North America, but that I don't know who's from South America.
Scarlet from North America.
Dignitas Killer. He's always done the best of the South Americans.
He's Chilean, too, so he's got really good...
chili?
Yeah. He's got good chili, but he can also breathe in high atmosphere. So if the tournament were to be held at, like,
the moon.
Colorado, he could nail that shit.
That's true.
You know what he does these days, by the way, guys? Do you want to know killer strategy right now? Never attacks. He builds like 300 spore crawlers and spine crawlers,
and then
maxes out on hydras and vipers, and he just tugs you into the stack these.
I think Chaos does something like that, except with some swarm hosts mixed in too. It sounds atrocious.
If that wasn't one way to make you go insane. Yeah. Well, for Korea, for me, it would either be Rain or Parting, personally.
I think Innovation might deserve it. Well, we don't know what the criteria
are. We'll see,
like,
won't we, Greg?
Yeah, we will.
Stay tuned for tomorrow's code.
Oh, yeah. Who's in, who's out?
WCS, excuse me.
Whoever wins
WCS
the group of death can be our representative for Korea.
Okay.
So you'll have to stay tuned for that, Goatlust, and then you'll see it.
Yeah, that's our official. This is our little tournament for the Korean representative. EU.
Yeah.
What was the fifth continent? It was Europe and... Or the
Asia, he said.
Asia?
Yeah, and
like
then
China?
Apart from that, there's Australia, New Zealand, Africa, Antarctica, Middle East.
Well, that's like a whole fuckload of regions. You said five.
He chuckles afterwards.
I'm trying to think of those African and Middle East regions.
Might compete with Australia.
The five regions were all of America, Asia apart from Korea, and then Korea, Europe, and then all the rest are another region.
Ah, okay.
North so America, guess, Scarlet.
I still think Juan. Scarlet has, like, the wrist injury.
Yeah, but we're talking... This is a hypothetical dream team. Scarlet would smear shit on Juan's face and shove him downstairs.
But not right now.
Well, in our dream team...
I'm going to have to agree with Greg, because if this gets started up tomorrow, then, you know, there is that wrist injury that we have to think about.
Here's the thing. Goatless, you know what's happening right now? Zergs will never pick other Zergs for a dream team thing because
what
then they
have to.
What
are you talking about? I fucking love Zerg. You're fucking out
no,
of
you
your
don't.
Mind.
I picked Killer for South America. He's Zerg.
Yeah, Joe. Okay, South America.
Oh, man.
Plus, the answer to today's question is agree to disagree.
So, EU?
I don't know about EU. Let's go with Scarlet there.
Okay.
She's on Team
Ace. She has European heritage.
Yeah.
So,
Europe. Juan from North America. Stefano for South America, just because I feel like...
No, you can't have two people from... Oh, wait. No, okay.
Yeah. America is just one whole thing, right?
Oh,
yeah.
Well, I was going to say... he's from a colony of France, and France had some colonies in South America as well, so I think you could almost do like a... You know, grandfather thing.
I thought South America was all Spanish and Portuguese.
Jeff is turning into that, like, businessman with a cowboy hat and a cigar and be like, we can get past it. There's loopholes. There's always loopholes.
I drink your milkshake.
Well, this is obviously not going to work. We're all going to disagree.
Yeah. Who goes for the other region then? I guess that's like between Moodblade and that South American or South African Protoss player.
Oh, Panda
Tank? Maybe Panda.
Yeah.
What was
oh,
Panda
right.
Candy?
He is
Panda
yeah.
What was
Panda Tank.
Him or Moodblade, I guess.
Yeah. I feel like Moodblade, I feel like there's a few Zergs from Australia that are probably better than Panda Tank, actually. I would say Mafia is way up there. Pig is very good.
I don't know. I think Panda Tank's better than both of them. He did really well in the WCS EU qualifiers.
He did. He consistently was up there. And he was playing with South African internet, which I know what a lot of you are thinking, is not as good as you think it is.
I want someone to look up the stats, and it turns out they actually have really good internet.
I would be...
There's random countries like that that just have, like, ridiculously good internet.
No, I'm pretty sure South
probably
Africa
not South
is
Africa,
sort of probably. Bottom of the barrel. As far as internet
strangely,
goes.
Strangely, you would be... Just, yeah, they've got... Fios
just
there.
Floating below, just floating below yeah. Australia.
Goatlust.
Oh, fucking hell.
As always, thank you for your call.
All right, thanks a lot, gentlemen.
All right,
catches.
Take care.
Thank you, dude.
I don't know that we actually gave him an official answer.
No, I don't think so either.
It's all for the discussion. Let's wrap up. Thanks for joining us once again. Of course, we have Live on 3 tomorrow, but our final thoughts from our guests, starting with you, Greg.
Big thanks to my team, EG, all our sponsors. Oh, I actually get to do the sponsors this week. One second.
It's fine.
Big thanks to Raidcall, our title sponsor, Monster, Kingston HyperX, Razer, Astro, Zam, Intel Extreme Boards, Inwin, Beyond Gaming, and Split Reason. And thanks to all of them. Thank you to all our callers. The call-ins this week were actually not awful, which was surprising. And then follow me on Twitter, at Idrajit, IDRAJIT, and watch my stream at twitch.tv/EG_Idra. Been streaming a lot and will continue to do so. So thank you all for watching.
Thank you. Thank you all. Do
Jeff?
I just go, Weed?
Thank yeah, just
there
go,
you
man.
Go.
Oh, you're
lay out the red, gotta lay out the red carpet for me, man. Yeah.
Jeff! Announcing Lord of the Protoss on Inside of the Game, Jeff in Control Robinson.
Thank you. Thank you, Weed. Big shout out to everyone that tuned in and attended DreamHack this past weekend. It's only my second or third hosting gig, but what I'm learning as a host is that you are at the mercy of everyone's fucking opinion, and if they have fun with you, you're having a great time, and if they don't, you're not. Everyone had fun with me, so I thank you. I appreciate that. And I want to give a big shout out to the guy that said that I was wearing my shirt into my dad pants tucked in. And I learned the term dad pants, and I really like it. I like it a lot. Follow me on Twitter, EG In Control. Watch my stream on Twitch, In Control TV. And do check out our latest extended series with Marcus Thorzane. Ekloff, I think it went pretty well. People liked it. And there'll be more of that kind of content coming out, so if you're interested in that kind of stuff, stay tuned. And then I'm actually going to be on our show Roleplay, where we play Dungeons & Dragons in 1 hour. So if you're interested in that, go to ItMeJP's Twitch channel after this, and I will be killing goblins and making fun of people and, in general, having a nerdy good time. Thank you.
All I want to say is please watch tune into Live on 3 tomorrow. I'm not sure who the hell the guests are going to be because Slasher doesn't tell me this shit until a couple hours before the show. Actually,
nice.
We're waiting on confirmation from both our guests. But that'll be tomorrow on onemoregame.tv. And, you know, I feel like it just would be a true show if I didn't take the opportunity to isolate one troll who said that I'm a no-good plat-playing Zerg scrub. I'll have you know that this season I will be finishing top 10 diamonds. So fuck off, son! What's up now, bitch? We'll see you next time. Peace!